Portable Magic by Smile Backwards. Summary. Magnus may go slightly overboard helping Alex set up for the book club gathering. Technically, perhaps, he didn't need to create a signature cocktail or barter a favor to Raphael for Oneg blood for the vampires or source biscotti directly from Italy, but hospitality is important and these are Alex's friends. He wants to make a good impression. Or, Alec is in a downworld book club and Magnus finds this unaccountably fascinating. Alec reading on the couch is a familiar sight in the loft, so it takes Magnus a full 30 seconds to identify what feels off to him about the picture. The thick hardback in Alec's hands has a distinctive midnight blue sleeve, marking its publisher as the Downworld Press, but the spine is a pale green rather than deep purple. Magnus has dozens of volumes spined in royal purple, indicating that their subject is spellwork and magical theory. Pale green, if he's not mistaken, is for fiction. Much as Magnus enjoys the occasional novel, he can't remember buying one from Downworld Press. It's a very niche imprint. "Darling," he says, coming over to the couch. Alec automatically and obligingly tips his face up for a kiss. "Hmm," Magnus hums contentedly, momentarily derailed before he recovers his question. "What's that you're reading?" Alec tucks a finger between the pages to hold his place and turns the cover toward Magnus. "Curse Crossed," it reads in curling silver letters. It's about a warlock who's under a Seelie curse, kind of fantasy with a side of romance. I like it so far. Magnus doesn't recognize it in the least. "How did you come across it?" he asks, intrigued. "I can tell it's from Downworld Press, but I don't recall purchasing it." "Corin picked it up for me. It was her choice for book club," Alec says, which, rather than improving Magnus's understanding, just gives him more questions. "I didn't realize you were in a book club," Magnus says, charmed. He has worried sometimes about the seeming shallowness of Alec's social circle, if he might be lonely. Alec deserves to be celebrated and adored. The idea that he's been considered odd, avoided in Shadowhunter circles, cuts Magnus to the heart. "I haven't been able to go in months," Alec says. "There's always been," he waves a hand. "You know." Magnus does know. Valentine and Rekiek demons and fading ley lines and the sheer bastardry of the Clave. It's been crisis after crisis since practically the moment they met. Magnus has been enjoying the past few weeks of relative peace immensely, getting to see Alec in a rare state of rest and relaxation. Once, he actually slept past 10 in the morning. "How did your friend come to choose a Downworld book?" Magnus asks. "Shadowhunters on the whole don't tend to have much interest in the Downworld unless it's to blame them for something." "Oh, Corin's a warlock," Alec says. "Most of the club are. I'm the only one who's not a Downworlder." Magnus racks his brain, but he can't think of any warlocks named Corin. Of course he doesn't know every warlock, but being the High Warlock of Brooklyn means most of the New York set is at least familiar to him. "I don't think I've had the pleasure of meeting her," Magnus says. "Perhaps you can introduce us sometime. You said there are other warlocks in your club, too." "Yeah, they're great," Alec says. "There's Alfonso and Janissa and Sam. People come and go depending on schedules." "Actually," he says, reaching for his phone on the coffee table, "I think I have a picture. Leticia took one. She was doing some kind of scrapbook." Magnus sits down beside Alec on the couch as he scrolls through his photo reel. It's mostly pictures of Chairman Mao and Magnus himself. Magnus is pleased to see. "Here," Alec says, pausing on a picture of a group of people smiling around a table cluttered with coffee mugs and danishes. Magnus looks at the picture in fascination. There are at least 5 warlocks, evidenced by the variety of warlock marks, horns and scales, and, in the case of one woman, a vivid set of violet eyes. Magnus doesn't recognize a single one of them, which is a surprise in and itself, until Samat Ruel is part of your book club? Magnus asks, staring at a warlock with a smattering of black scales across the curve of his cheekbones and a matching ascot around his throat. Samat Ruel is older than even Magnus. He's a revered expert in blood magic and runic theory. And as far as Magnus was aware, no one had spoken to him in at least 3 decades. Yeah, Alex says, looking like it's Magnus who said something strange. Sam. Sam, Magnus mouths soundlessly. Alec names the group members one by one, and as each unfamiliar name and face goes by, Magnus questions his vaunted social network. I keep the books we read on the top shelf, Alec says, turning to the polished maple bookcase that Magnus cleared out for his use when Alec moved in. Magnus had thought it was a rather eclectic mix. Alec seems to lean toward mystery novels, but on the shelf is everything from Shakespeare to teen-marketed melodrama. Dracula? Magnus laughs as he scans the titles. Henrietta thought it would be funny, Alec says. She's one of the vampires in the Harlem clan. And was it? Alec smiles. Yeah, actually. How did you all meet? Magnus asks. He can't imagine many places Alec would have contact with downworlders in a positive context. Magnus and the cabinet have been slowly integrating him into neutral spaces, and Magnus takes him to the occasional warlock party as his plus one, but as soon as anyone sees the deflect rune on Alec's neck, he tends to get a chilly reception. Magnus is, of course, required to ameliorate this with copious claiming kisses and back off, I will cut you if you try anything vibes, as any good boyfriend would. There was this coffee shop I used to go to, Alec explains. It was open all night. When Izzy and Jace wanted to sneak out to go clubbing, I'd go out with them, but then I'd stay at the coffee shop with a book until they were ready to walk home. It's such an Alexander thing to do, Magnus thinks, keeping a protective eye on his siblings from afar. The book club was meeting there one night, Alec continues, and they'd actually discussed the book I was reading previously, so Sam came up and invited me over to talk with them. Samat Ruel, Magnus suddenly remembers, has always had very similar tastes to Magnus in romantic partners. He doubts it was pure literary enthusiasm that made him approach Alec. They didn't realize I was a shadow hunter at first, Alec says, rubbing his wrist against the rune on his neck. It was a little awkward once they did, but I guess I convinced them somehow I wasn't going to be a jerk, and they invited me to the next meeting. I like going. I think it's been almost 4 years now. I'm glad, darling. That's lovely, Magnus says, pressing another brief kiss to Alec's lips. Maybe someday he'll get to meet these fellow downworlders with his similar exquisite taste in shadowhunters. Will it bother you if I watch a show here while you read? Alec adjusts position so his back is snugly against Magnus's shoulder instead of the armrest. Not at all. The bright lights and pounding music of Pandemonium have utterly no effect on Alec when he has a book in his hands. His focus is absolute. Magnus can't believe he never conceived of this before. He can hold court at the club and hold Alec in his arms simultaneously. It's glorious. Alec isn't particularly fond of Pandemonium. Drinking and dancing aren't pastimes he would participate in at all if Magnus didn't invite him to. And most downworlders at the club look at him with either trepidation or disdain. But it's a part of Magnus's life, his work, and so of course is Alec. It's important that the downworld see them together. Magnus intends for Alec to be by his side for a long time to come, and it's best that everyone get used to that, that they understand the consequences Magnus will rain down upon anyone who touches Alexander Lightwood unkindly. Are you sure it's okay for me not to pay attention to your meetings? Alec had asked when Magnus proposed that he take his latest novel to the club. It just seems, I don't know, rude. It'll be perfectly fine, darling, Magnus said. People are used to seeing him with arm candy, although he certainly doesn't want to frame it that way for Alec. The optics may be similar, but nothing else is. Having Alec beside him at Pandemonium is a symbol with quite a different meaning. Having Alec tucked up beneath his arm also makes Magnus feel much more magnanimous when he's being asked for things like favors and leniency. The Downworlders seem to catch on to this effect quite quickly, and any raised eyebrows over Alec's runes are immediately lowered. István Kovák, in particular, is no fool. He's come to power in New York community by taking advantage of any opportunity he sees, including romantic bliss. I might be willing to offer my assistance in your difficulties with the Seelie realm, Magnus tells István, which is a great deal more receptive than he'd been on the subject in past negotiations. He feels much calmer about Fey magic when one of his hands is carting through Alexander's hair during the discussions. They pause for drinks while one of István's lieutenants goes to fetch a map, and Magnus bends to press a kiss to Alec's forehead. "Would you like a drink, darling?" he asks, breaking Alec's laser focus. Alec blinks and shifts slightly in Magnus's arms. "I'm all right. Is everything going okay?" "It is," Magnus says. "Wouldn't you say, István?" "I would," István agrees. He looks at Alec curiously and asks, "Good book?" Alec nods. "Yeah, so far. Do you like mysteries?" "I do," István says. Magnus can tell he certainly finds the mystery that is Alec intriguing. "I thought I figured out the killer early on, but they just showed up dead in a rowboat with a knife through their heart, so now I'm back at square one," Alec says. "May I see the title?" "Oh, sure. Sorry," Alec says, turning the cover forward. "This is actually a series, so if you want to try it, I'd recommend starting with the first book to introduce you to the detective more, but you'd also be fine to jump right into this one. Some members of my book club are." István blinks in much the same way Magnus imagines he did when Alec informed him that he was part of something so mundane as a book club. "This book was your choice, wasn't it, Alexander?" Magnus says. "Yeah," Alec confirms. "I read the first one a few years back and I liked it." He smiles at Magnus teasingly and adds, "I forgot to tell you, we picked a meeting date for the club. It's on the 14th, so don't schedule to whisk me away to Paris or anywhere." Magnus immediately plans to take him to Paris on the 15th. "We're going to meet at the coffee shop beside Battery Park. I'll probably be home around 10. Magnus frowns. "I thought you said when it was your turn to pick the book, it was also your turn to pick the venue." "It is," Alec says. "Well then, why don't you host it at the loft?" Magnus asks, perplexed. "You'd be okay with that?" "Darling," Magnus says, pained. "It's your home too. I'd appreciate you telling me if you're planning to have people over so I don't double book, but you certainly don't need my permission." Magnus had worried about the fact that Alec moving into the loft rather than finding them a new apartment together might incline Alec to continue to think of the place more as Magnus's than a joint home, but when Magnus had proposed a house hunting trip, Alec had looked at him like he was addled. While they're on the subject, Magnus charges ahead. "If you want to change something, you can do that too. Paint the walls, buy new bedsheets. There must be something you'd like to change." Alec's footprint in the loft is honestly even less than Chairman Meow, with his three litter boxes, innumerable toys, and penchant for destroying at least one piece of furniture every month in a shamelessly transparent bid for attention that Magnus nonetheless capitulates to. When Alec moved in, he brought his weapons, one duffel bag of clothing, nothing even on hangers, and two battered cardboard boxes full of books. Alec considers. He opens his mouth and closes it, then opens it again and says, "I don't like your plates." "You don't like our plates," Magnus repeats, fixing the possessive. "Go on. Tell me more, darling. I can take it." "And our glasses. They're really heavy, Magnus," Alec complains, obviously getting into the swing of it now. "I don't want to hold a quarter of a pound of cut crystal to drink water. I know they're not classy, but I just want some plastic cups, okay? What else? Magnus asks, fascinated. Alex can trash the entire loft as far as he's concerned. The bar cart would be a loss, but Magnus will pitch it over the side of the balcony joyfully if it makes Alex feel 1 inch more at home. Alec laughs. I don't know, Magnus. Maybe another bookshelf would be nice. All right, Magnus says with satisfaction. We'll go shopping this weekend. Maybe he can convince Alec to go into a few clothing stores as well. Magnus has been meaning to buy him some new sweaters. Fall is approaching, and Alec would look lovely in and out of soft cashmere. Magnus has 3 criteria when buying Alec new clothing. Comfortable, classic, and easily removable. He'll take Alec to the nice bookstore on 3rd, too. Isvan's lieutenant has returned, and he's staring at Magnus and Alec and their domestic concerns as if all comprehension has failed him. Isvan himself looks amused and more relaxed than he has all evening. Well, he says, if the important matters are settled, perhaps we might continue our discussion on the Seelie artifice and allow Mr. Lightwood to return to his book. Alec adjusts his position against Magnus's shoulder, and Magnus nods. Yes, let's. Magnus may go slightly overboard helping Alec set up for his book club gathering. Technically, perhaps, he didn't need to create a signature cocktail or barter a favor to Raphael for Oneg blood for the vampires or source the biscotti directly from Italy, but hospitality is important, and these are Alec's friends. He wants to make a good impression. We usually just have coffee, Alec says a little faintly, looking at the spread. The pastries are steaming slightly with a heat retention charm. Coffee, Magnus thinks, magicking 3 carafes of premium blend Colombian onto the table. Good hells, how could he have forgotten coffee? It's amazing, Alec says, pressing a kiss to Magnus's lips. But you really didn't need to do all this, Magnus. There are more important things you could be using your magic for. Nothing is more important to me than you, darling, Magnus says. Out on the balcony, there's a sizzling sound of a portal opening. Magnus removed his blocking ward specifically for the night, and the balcony itself has been widened and populated with comfortable chairs and divans in bright colored fabrics. That's Alfonso, Alec says, stepping onto the balcony to greet a stocky warlock with a multitude of short orange horns. Goodness, Alfonso says, looking around. This is lovely, Alec. Thanks, Alec says. Magnus set it up for us. Alec glances over at where Magnus has been standing, almost immobile, trying not to look as desperately interested as he is. Sorry, have you not met Magnus? Alec asks. I usually don't need to introduce him. Magnus, this is Alfonso Barston. Pleasure, Alfonso says, shaking Magnus's outstretched hand. Luckily, I haven't had any issues I've needed to bother the High Warlock with, but I'm glad I know where to find you. Well, you're welcome to visit any time, Magnus says. Any friend of Alexander's is a friend of mine. While Alec mans the balcony receptions, Magnus lets in 2 vampire women and a particularly grizzled-looking werewolf through the door. Another round of introductions commences, and then everyone converges on the snack table. Is this genuine Volcanica? Letitia asks, sipping her coffee. Her violet eyes slide closed in ecstasy. Wow, Janissa says around a blueberry muffin. You should host more often, Alec. Maybe I will, Alec says, and Magnus feels a flush of triumph run through him. The last portal of the night disgorges the famed Samat Ruel onto the balcony. Apologies for my tardiness, I almost got the time zone wrong again. Magnus, he says, with the tip of his head, I want you to know I fully appreciate your invention. A single step when it would have taken me 10 hours by air. Magnus had more lofty aspirations for the portal than shuttling warlocks to and from monthly book club, but there are certainly worse uses. He gives a shallow bow. You're not living in New York, then? Oh no, Samat says. I visited for a few weeks in the 90s and found it much too busy for me on the whole, but I hate to miss the book club. It's a lovely group, and made lovelier still by our host. He approaches Alec and raises Alec's hand to press a kiss over the top his knuckles. Alec accepts this with only a generally bemused look, which indicates to Magnus that it's a common greeting. "Hi, Sam," he says. "I'm glad you could make it." "I still can't believe you're dating Magnus Bane," Corin says to Alec, shaking her head. The rainbow of scales along her neck flash in the light. You realize it's like dating the Beyoncé of the warlock world. "Who's Beyoncé?" Alec asks. The doorbell rings again, and Magnus glances at his watch. "Darling, that'll be my consultation. We'll be in my office out of your way." As much as Magnus wants to continue to mingle and wring every drop of gossip about Alec from the assembled group, he'd planned deliberately to give Alec time alone with his friends. Magnus's consult is a young warlock named Talia, with skin tinted a subtle green. She could pass for a mundane without a glamour, Magnus thinks, but everyone would probably think her ill. "If you wouldn't mind coming through to my office," Magnus says. My boyfriend is hosting book club." His hands have gone clammy, heartbeat racing. What the hell kind of slip-up was that? "Oh?" Talia says, with what sounds like genuine interest. "Do you know what book they read?" "A mystery novel," Magnus says. "I believe the title was Black Geraniums." "I loved Black Geraniums," Talia gasps, looking wistfully out toward the balcony. Magnus smiles gently. Something about her reminds him a bit of Clary. "I doubt they'd be averse to you joining the discussion. We can go have a chat after your consultation if you like." "That would be really nice," Talia says, and takes the seat Magnus offers across from his workspace. "I hate to bother you with something so trivial, but I have terrible insomnia. I genuinely can't remember the last time I slept more than 3 hours at a time. I've tried every medication the mundane world has to offer. Red light, no light, all kinds of herbs and potions. The apothecary told me you might be able to help." When Magnus looks more closely, he can see the blue rings of sleeplessness beneath her eyes, not quite entirely hidden by the makeup. "It's no bother to me at all," Magnus assures her. He knows what it is to be bone-tired but unable to rest. "The one good thing is, it does give me a lot of reading time," Talia jokes weakly. Further questions reveal that Talia has taken practically every potion under the sun to little effect. Magnus knows what the apothecary referred her to him to make. Dream Drop is a complex potion and thankfully little needed, so it's not commonly stocked in the average shop. "I'll have it ready for you by week's end," Magnus promises. "In the meanwhile, come have some coffee and I'll introduce you to Alexander and the rest." Talia is welcomed eagerly onto the balcony. Henrietta tugs her down onto the blue divan. Jameson is telling us a horrible lie about how he identified the killer by page 27. But Talia glances around in confusion. Claire wasn't even introduced until chapter 3. Henrietta cackles and points a finger at Jameson, the lone werewolf in the group. "I meant page 47, Jameson says. "Oh yes, of course," Janissa laughs. Alec is smiling too as he stands. "Does anyone need a refill on their drink?" "I'll help you, darling," Magnus says, magicking a silver tray into his hand and collecting the variety of mugs and glasses. Alexander selected them all personally on their home goods shopping excursion, along with the promised plastic cups and new crockery. "Thanks," Alec says, and follows Magnus inside to pour more coffee and shake cocktails. He saves one of the cocktails for himself, which makes Magnus glow with pride. Making things to Alec's particular tastes is an ongoing challenge he set himself. "Could you add some?" Alec makes a graceful twisting motion with his wrist, imitating the gesture Magnus usually uses to call his magic. "For me?" Magnus does without thinking, a curl of blue magic licking the edges of Alec's glass like flame. Alec has described the added taste as a bit like sugar, sweet. Magnus can't think of anyone else who would describe his magic as sweet, of all things, but he supposes it's as enraptured with Alec as he is. It occurs to Magnus only after Alec returns to the balcony and Samat and Letitia choke on their drinks that consuming someone's magic is considered rather intimate for warlocks. Not quite the emotional equivalent of fellatio, but it's at least on the level of very deep and enamored kissing. Alec has never asked for Magnus's magic in mixed company before, and Magnus hasn't thought of the implication in decades. There's been no reason to. Magnus watches Alec drink down his cocktail and feels his body flush with heat. Samat rises from his chair on the balcony and comes through the living room where Magnus is observing. "Well, that was rather a declaration," he says. Magnus glances away, suddenly ashamed. He hadn't meant to embarrass Alec, wholly ignorant of the connotation in front of his friends. "I didn't even think about it, honestly," he admits. Samat pauses for a brief moment, then says softly, "That is perhaps even more of one." "Yes," Magnus says, equally quiet. "I suppose it is." "He's very lovely," Samat says, raising his glass to Magnus. "I wish you happiness." "Thank you," Magnus says. "When you first met him," he pauses. It's perhaps gauche to rub in his good fortune further. Magnus and Samat had once dated the same spiral labyrinth accolade, sequentially and not simultaneously, and had been brokenheartedly rejected by the same Austrian musician. Their type runs parallel. "Oh yes," Samat says, picking up the thread himself. "I once had hopes to be, to Alec, what you are now. When I first saw him in that sad little overnight coffee shop, I knew I had to meet him. Obviously, you know, he looks like..." Samat sweeps a hand from head to foot, indicating the gorgeousness of Alec's everything. "I am aware, yes," Magnus says. He appreciates other people's jealousy, less so their interest. "But it was when I spoke to him that I knew he was truly special," Samat says. "Such an odd mix of hesitance and confidence, a kindness I never would have thought to see in a shadow hunter. We didn't realize he was one at first, of course," Samet adds. "I invited him over to our table to talk about his book. The light was dim, and he was wearing a jacket with a collar. I didn't even notice his rune until perhaps 10 minutes in. The light shifted, and Letitia grabbed my hand very tightly." Magnus can imagine it. The sudden deer-like stillness of the warlocks, the vampires ready to run at speed, and Alec arrested by their fear. "He apologized, turned to leave," Samat continues, "but Janissa took pity on him. She asked him how he thought the book would end." Samat looks at Magnus. "Alec said he thought it would end happily, that the protagonist and the villain would put their past behind them and focus on building a better world." Magnus looks out the window at Alec and his friends. Alec has the book open and is running a finger along a passage, clearly making a point. "That wasn't how the book ended, in point of fact," Samat says. "But that doesn't matter. Things ended that way for us." "I'm glad," Magnus says, with full-hearted sincerity. "The club clearly makes him happy." Samat elbows Magnus gently in the ribs. "Not half so happy as you make him," he laughs, utterly smitten. "I've never heard an unkind word about you pass his lips. It's all praise of the highest order." Magnus smiles. To know that Alec talks about him in such glowing terms to people who mostly had never even met him is ridiculously endearing. "He barely looked at me twice back when I tried my luck at flirting," Samat laments, a little wistfully. "You must have been very bold, or very persistent." "Both," Magnus says. He winces a bit to think exactly how persistent he had been when Alex was clearly struggling, but he can't regret the end result. "I needed you to push me," Alec had told him a few months into their relationship. "Happiness was never something he would have reached for himself." "Well," Samat says, tapping his glass against Magnus's, "to the victor goes the spoils." Magnus completes the dream drop potion for Talia to effusive thanks and works on refining it over the next few months, reducing the dizziness side effects and the considering substitutions for the more difficult to obtain ingredients. He spent sweet, quiet evenings curled up on the couch with Alec, writing up his findings while Alec proceeds through the varied book club selections, historical fiction and sci-fi and adventure. Once Magnus has finished his notes and had them peer-reviewed by Ragnar, he opens a portal to share them on the communal message board in the Spiral Labyrinth. An essential hub of warlock gossip, the most viewed section of the board by far is the ever-updating social chatter corner, but there's a healthy academic section as well. Magnus is highlighting a section of his post to be very clear that the bloodroot can be substituted for yarrow, but absolutely nothing else. When he sees it, a posting for the New York City Book Club. It lists the date of the next meeting, Alfonso's contact information, and the name of the current book, Through the Centuries with Lorenzo Ray. Magnus chokes on air. Lorenzo Ray. Lorenzo Ray, of all warlocks, has written a book. The man is a charlatan and a snob and a... Alexander... Magnus calls. Yeah? Alec asks, coming off the balcony. He's shirtless and gorgeous from training exercises he's been working through, and Magnus can barely find it in himself to appreciate it. This is what Lorenzo Ray has reduced him to. Are you reading Lorenzo's memoir for your book club this month? Magnus asks. Alec had been cagey about the current book he was reading. Yes, Alec admits. Lorenzo Ray is a self-important bastard of a warlock, Magnus says. He wonders what Lorenzo has written about Majorca, if anything. All hells. Magnus could be a character in this book. Letitia just chose it for the gossip, Magnus, Alec says, placating. He'd met Lorenzo in passing in a party and knows Magnus's antipathy well. One of the discussion questions is literally whether we should consider Lorenzo a reliable narrator. He's emphatically not, Magnus says. He doesn't need to read the book to know it. Am I mentioned in the book at all? Alec shakes his head. Not so far, but I'm only on the third chapter. He's going on about some party he attended in Russia. Magnus scoffs. He lets it go for the moment. Goes over to run his hands down Alec's biceps, but later he digs the book out of Alec's bookshelf. He'd secreted it behind War and Peace. Magnus hate-reads it through, all 453 grotesque pages while Alec is at the Institute, then jams number 2 on a speed dial. Magnus? Katrina answers. It takes Magnus a moment to even gather words. Have you read this ludicrous excuse for a book? I don't know, Magnus, Kat says patiently. What's the book? Lorenzo Ray's memoir, Magnus says, disdain dripping off the word. Lorenzo wrote a memoir? Kat says, sounding entertained. Am I in it? Only by brief allusion. There had been a section about Lorenzo's foray into healing magic, and he'd mentioned Kat's work glancingly. But you are, I gather, Kat says. Wait, let me come over. I want to see it. A portal starts to open on the balcony, and Kat steps through with alacrity. Magnus waves the book at her. Lorenzo is smiling smarmily on the cover, a glass of red wine in his hand. This is an abomination, Magnus says, not without a little reluctantly impressed awe in his voice. To have created something so horrifying, a modicum of respect must be allowed. Kat grabs for it so she can read the back cover, which includes such quotes as, "Transcendent, Mr. Ray takes us on a fabulous journey through time," and "A triumph from the worst the warlock community has to offer." I forgot Downworld Press was even still operating, Kat says, looking at the blue sleeve. The book spine is gold for autobiographies, and Magnus flicks his wrist to turn it pale green in a fit of pique. I should check if they have anything new in the medical section. I wouldn't trust it anyway if they're allowing this kind of drivel to make it to print, Magnus says. Kat rolls her eyes. She hands the book back and makes her way to the bar cart, pouring out a glass of wine before settling in comfortably on the sofa. All right, I'm ready now. Tell me all about how Lorenzo has defamed and slandered you. Magnus sets the scene, as it should be set, in Majorca, 1905. Magnus has been minding his own business at a party for the 200th birthday of an acquaintance, and Lorenzo has accosted him to discuss the supposed shortcomings of a new spell that Magnus has pioneered with Ragnar. In the book, Lorenzo's recounting of the conversation had layered in words like condescending and elitist. I was perfectly polite, Magnus refutes. Even though as a self-styled expert, Lorenzo really should have known the difference between a second and third tier warding magic. And he said my wardrobe was... Magnus opens the book to quote as if he hasn't memorized the slide. Gaudy, bordering on garish. Oh gods, was this during your purple top hat phase? Katrina asks. No, Magnus argues. He abandoned the top hat in 1904, and my cane was period appropriate. Magnus, Kat says, I promise you no one could care less that you argued with Lorenzo about spells and fashion a century ago. Magnus sputters a bit more on principle, but he supposes Kat's right. She often is. And Lorenzo isn't the first warlock to have written an autobiography or to find parts of it contested by others who haven't yet passed into the grave. Magnus himself has been approached several times with a book deal for his own memoir, with a frankly exorbitant advance included in the offer. But ripping his life open for the masses has never appealed. He still finds it difficult sometimes to allow even Alexander a window into the painful moments of his past. How did you even find out about this? Kat asks later, three glasses of wine down, paging through the book. Alexander is reading it for book club, Magnus says, still feeling mildly petulant. Alec is in a book club? Kat asks. Yes, Magnus says, and explains the whole situation and the fact that there is apparently an entire subculture of warlocks who genuinely avoid interpersonal drama and have never needed to come crying to the high warlock over a hangnail. That's adorable, Kat concludes. Can I come to the next meeting? Kat is unfortunately on shift at the hospital during the next book club meeting, but Magnus promises to keep her up to date. Winter is in full swing, and Magnus has set up a magic dome of warmth over the balcony, akin to the outdoor heater restaurants have begun setting out on their patios, so the temperature is crisp without being actively hostile. There are soft throw blankets on all the chairs, along with piles of knitted hats, scarves, and gloves. Hot chocolate and cider have been added to the drink options, and Alec waited in line, 30 minutes deep, for glazed cinnamon donuts from the famed bakery down the street. It's too beautiful a setting to be discussing such a terrible book, Magnus laments, but such are the small disappointments of life. Club members arrive one by one. Corin hands off a pale blue potion to Alec when she steps through her portal. Here's the wound-healing potion you asked for, she says, and pulls on a pair of red cable-knit mittens. Thanks, Alec says. I'll have the Institute disperse your fee tomorrow. I could have made that for you, darling, Magnus says, a little hurt. Alec usually comes to him for magical expertise. I know, but Corin's good at potions too, and I'd rather you spend your time with me instead of making potions for the Institute. He pecks Magnus on the lips and carries the potion inside while Magnus looks after him with what is probably an immensely sappy gaze. Corin laughs. Both of you are so hopeless over each other, honestly. You know, we interrogated Alec for months about what had changed so drastically in his life after you started dating. He's so much happier. You could even tell the difference from his book choices. I mean, he once made us read War and Peace, Magnus. I think he's the only one that made it all the way through. Corin pauses. No, I take that back. Sam finished it. I remember them discussing Andre's fate at the end. As if on cue, a new portal opens and Simat steps through, shaking snow off his tweed coat. Alec comes back out onto the balcony to help Samat out of the coat and hang it in the corner. "Thank you," Samat says graciously, and presses his usual greeting kiss to Alec's knuckles. Magnus feels a flash of irritation even though he knows there's nothing behind it. Would Samat still do that, Magnus wonders, if Alec had a ring on that hand? He had been considering more and more whether Alec would accept a proposal. It hasn't even been a year. Perhaps Magnus should wait, but he doesn't want to. He'll have so little time with Alec as it is. The rings on his own fingers feel somehow heavier whenever Magnus thinks about it. His oval signet ring with the stylized B would look lovely on Alec's hand. And even if Alec wouldn't want to take Bane as a surname, Magnus thinks he'd like the symbolism of that. Alec enjoys it when Magnus shows a hint of possessiveness. Not in the sense of ownership, but in belonging. He likes sitting back to chess with Magnus at Pandemonium as Magnus conducts his business affairs. He likes the protection charms Magnus weaves into his clothing. And he likes drinking Magnus's magic. Magnus had explained the overtone of intimacy to him, apologetically, after the slip-up at the first book club hosting. "I'm sorry if I embarrassed you in front of your friends." "Did I embarrass you?" Alec asked. "No," Magnus admitted. "Quite the opposite." He remembered vividly the flush of pride and satisfaction that went through him watching Alec swallow the blue flames of his magic, watching everyone else watch it. "Do you think it embarrassed Alfonso or Letitia or anyone?" "I think it surprised them," Magnus said. "It's not something commonly done, but I don't think they were embarrassed by it. Some people don't enjoy seeing public displays of affection, but everyone in the book club seemed to be actively rooting for them." "Then I don't mind," Alec said, shrugging. "I like people to know that I'm yours." Magnus had felt his brain almost short-circuit. What better way is there to show everyone that Alec is his, and Magnus is Alec's, than marriage? The Clave, of course, might be bastards about it, Magnus thinks with a sinking heart. Alec is already waging an uphill battle for credibility because of his relationship with Magnus and his work toward equality with the downworld. Does Magnus really have the right to make it harder for him? He wants to see his ring on Alec's finger, but the Shadowhunters will see it too. Marriage isn't something Alec would ever consent to hide. If he were Magnus's husband, he'd wear the ring proudly. Magnus puts his hopes to the side as the book club members choose their seats and get comfortable, copies of Lorenzo's books in their hands. Jameson, Magnus is pleased to see, is using his book as a coaster for his whiskey glass. He looks unbothered by the nippy air. The werewolf genes in him, perhaps. Henrietta and Irene, with their cold vampire blood, look equally unaffected. Magnus considers going back inside and puttering about in his workshop as he usually does when the book discussion commences, but he has read the book this time. Perhaps he'll just stay a while, on the periphery, to hear what people have to say. "This book was fucking amazing," Letitia says, which is not a promising start for the maintenance of Magnus's blood pressure. Jameson looks at her skeptically. "Did we read the same book?" "Yes, thank you," Magnus thinks. No, I mean, it's complete crap," Letitia says, "but I loved it from start to finish. The sheer pettiness on display is delicious. Have any of you met the man?" Alec and Samat both raise their hands. "What were your opinions of him?" "Oh, rather impressed with himself, I suppose," Samat says. "But the young often are. He was barely 100 when I met him." Alec shrugs. "He mostly just talked to me about art. I didn't follow a lot of it, but he seemed kind of pretentious." They continue with discussion of their favorite pieces of gossip and scandal pulled from the pages, none of which was particularly news to Magnus, although he sometimes disagreed with Lorenzo's interpretation of events. He finds it baffling that even Samat had apparently missed the great Spanish scandal of 1989, which had forced the High Warlock of Seville to retire in disgrace. Alfonso and Corinne and the rest live rather solitary lives. Typical warlock drama is barely even spectator sport for them until it's published into book format. Once they've all agreed that the High Warlock's comeuppance was well-deserved, Letitia moves on to the next discussion question, squinting at her paper list. What did you think of Lorenzo's relationship with his wife, Marianne? That had been the one poignant chapter of the book, Magnus will admit. Marianne had been mortal, and she had passed at 76 to Lorenzo's genuine devastation. Magnus had found himself gripping the cover, thinking of Alec and the two few years he had left with him. I really felt for Lorenzo in that chapter, Irene said. As a vampire, Magnus would bet that she too has outlived lovers. Very sad. I was surprised he married a mortal, Alec said. I didn't think warlocks did that. Warlocks tend to gravitate towards other immortals, but it's not terribly uncommon to marry a mortal. Usually, if they're very in love, they'll marry them quite quickly since they know their time together will be unfortunately limited, Janissa imparts, this with the factual dryness of the academic she is, and then her eyes widen. Her mouth snaps shut, a regretful hand coming up to cover her lips. Oh, Alec says, and then after a beat, a look down at his empty hands, more softly. Oh. The wine glass slips from Magnus's fingers. Vaguely from very far away, he hears it shatter against the ground. That's not, darling, that's not. Alec glances over at him in surprise. He obviously hadn't realized that Magnus had stayed quietly in the far corner for the discussion. It's okay, Magnus, he says. You don't have to want that with me. The sincerity in his voice makes it all the more devastating. Magnus can feel his eyes growing wet, the glamour on them flicker and snap. I do want that with you, Alexander. From the corner of his vision, he can see Alfonso and Talia making desperate should-we-leave faces at each other, but he can't focus on anyone else right now. Do you want that? Of course I do, Alec says, steady and true, not at all embarrassed to cut his heart open in front of an audience. Alec deserves a proposal with a backdrop of rose petals and candles, caviar and champagne, and yet Magnus can't help but think that this, too, is fitting. Hot chocolate and books, scarves around their necks. The love they share is all these things, beautiful and bright and rare, warm and quiet and soft. Magnus takes the ring from his own finger amid a chorus of suppressed gasps. Then, Alexander Gideon Lightwood, will you marry me? Alec smiles. Yes, he says, and grasps the tassels of Magnus's scarf to pull him forward into a kiss. Good book, darling, Magnus asks, grinning as he sits down beside Alec on the couch. Yeah, Alec says, laughing. Their wedding guest book is open across his knees, hundreds of well wishes in bright spelled ink. When Magnus had posted the engagement announcement on the message board in the Spiral Labyrinth, there had been an immediate frenzy, everyone fully expecting it to be the party of the year. Magnus thinks he can safely say that he met expectations with the reception, but the ceremony itself was quiet, almost reverent. Alec had somehow convinced the Clave to allow it to be held in the Institute, in the chapel, and the light flickering through the stained glass windows had dappled him in red and gold and blue. Happy, happily ever after, Letitia has written in the book in graceful cursive. Magnus takes the book from Alec's hands and closes it. Happily ever after, darling, he says, and leans in for a kiss.